So we left off in beginning at chapter 14 there. We had talked last week just about the birth of Samuel and how God had arranged him to be a Nazirite from birth. And of course, with that decree, in a sense, with that command that he would become a Nazirite, that really came big expectations, I guess. The following of a Nazirite really meant that you were extremely dedicated to the Lord, that you were going to follow Him no matter what. And as we'll see, Samson fell short almost right away. But God is sovereign, and He still uses man, even in the most depraved state, he'll use a man for his glory. So here we start in verse 1 of chapter 14, and it says, "Now Samuel went down to Timnah and saw a woman in Timnah of the daughters of the Philistines. So he went up and told his father and mother, saying, I have seen a woman in Timnah of the daughter of the Philistines. Now therefore, get her for me as a wife." Quite a demanding young man, I guess you'd say. So Timnah means portion, and it was part of Dan, the area of Dan there, and it was just west of Zorah. Zorah was the place in which Samson was born, and that place would be the possession of the Philistines in King Asa's time, and so we see the opposing force here is the Philistines. So if you get confused, it's Samson is the judge in which God is attempting here to use to draw Israel, his people, out of opposition with the Philistines. So out of that oppression that they would be in from the Philistines. And so it's interesting what you see here. And, you know, I mean, Samuel is no different than leaders today or people today, right? He has two eyes, a nose, and two ears. And sometimes the eyes see what they want to see. And look what he says here. I have seen a woman. I have seen her. He was led, not by what the Lord had wanted him in this case, but by what his flesh desired. And he was led by his eyes. He was led to these daughters of the Philistines. And you can say that the Philistines really were the pagans of the day. They were the ones that you could look upon and say, well, Israel certainly didn't want to intermix with the Philistines. So look what he says there in verse 2. Quite demanding. He says, "Get her for me as a wife," to his parents. And as we spoke before, you know, as we saw in chapter 13, Manoah there and his wife seemed to be very in touch with God, right? They seemed to be people of God, and they seemed to be on the right path, right? They wanted to dedicate this child. They asked, "Well, Lord, what should we do with this child, you know? When he's born, what are we going to do with him, you know?" So it was a quest of these parents to really raise this child in such a way and do the right things, right? Do the right things so that he would lead a godly life. I don't think, by any stretch of the imagination, that they would have approved of the Philistines being part of that picture. So here, a very demanding request, probably something that is very resisted by mom and pop, and very concerning, of course. It says, "Then His father and mother said to him, "Is there no woman among the daughters of your brethren or among all my people that you must go and get a wife from the uncircumcised Philistines?" I think sometimes, we see this even today, right? That Christians sometimes go shopping for the spouses, and you see single clubs pop up in Christian community, and all of a sudden the secular guys go, "Oh, them women are pretty nice over there. Let's go join that club." And pretty soon you've got a mixture of Philistines and Israelites, in a sense. Now it doesn't always happen that way, but I've only heard stories. I haven't self-experienced it, right? But got to be careful of that, that somehow we don't get unequally yoked with the unbeliever, with the pagan there. So the concern here of the parent was, isn't there anybody else here within our mix that you can yoke with, you can feel content in your faith with, and that's kind of what we ask our children, right? Are you sure you want to date that person? Because they might not be the best for you, So it's a parent's heart to say, "Hey, are you in the right position?" And then it goes on in verse 3, and it says, "And Samuel said to his father, 'Get her for me, for what? She pleases me well.'" In other words, he looks at her, and her appearance pleases the eye. And we got to be careful, right? That even in verse, we'll get here pretty soon, but in chapter 17, it shows Israel as going after that was pleasing to their eyes, right? It was right in their own eyes. And so oftentimes when we look in our own, with our own glasses, we can certainly get in trouble. But what we have to ask is, how about it, God? Is this something that you would have me to do? And when we ask that, sometimes we want the right answer, right? Yes, this is something you can do. Right, we want that answer. We want a confirming yes from the Lord. What happens when we get that answer of no, this isn't the right thing? Even though it looks good to you, the results of this isn't necessarily going to be good. And I think it's a challenge to us to go beyond what the appearance looks like. Does it look good to you? Yeah, it looks good. Okay, then ask the Lord. Lord, does it look good for you? And if he responds with a resounding no, then don't do it. Don't do it. It's a danger zone. So, verse 4, but his father and mother did not know that it was of the Lord that he was seeking an occasion to move against the Philistines. For at that time the Philistines had dominion over Israel. If there's anything God knows, right, it's our hearts. He knows what Samuel was going to lean toward, and that was women, and certainly God would use that for his glory. I always think of how he uses the weak to confound the wise, right? Sometimes he does strange things. He allows our weaknesses actually to be for his advantage. Our weakness doesn't cancel out God's power. It doesn't, somehow minimize what he is able to do. But here's the Philistines against Israel. They're oppressing Israel. We even hear later on, I think either in this chapter or chapter 15, where Israel seems to even have they're in such a oppression there, that they have become satisfied in their oppression, and they start to say, "Well, we're under the rule, in a sense, of the Philistines, so we better do what they say," kind of thing. And so God is about to use even the fault of Samson here for his glory. Verse 5, so Samson went down to Timnah with his father and mother and came to the vineyard of Timnah. Now to his surprise, a young lion came roaring after him, and the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him, and he tore the lion apart as one would have torn apart a young goat, though he had nothing in his hand. But he did not tell his father or mother what he had done. Well, it's interesting here. The vineyards of Timnah present a curious point here, is that if you remember right, back in Numbers chapter 6, it would talk about what it meant to be a Nazirite, right? What did that look like? In one of the things that it says there is that he shall separate himself from wine. And I think later on it even supports even touching the product of grapes, in a sense, even taking part in the grapes. So here we have Samson. He is progressing toward, or he came to the vineyard here of Timnah. And, you know, sometimes people want to get so close to the fire without touching it. They want to experience the heat of the fire without touching it. But there comes a point when you're going to get burned, right? And we'll see that. As the enemy tries to lure us, or lure Samson here, through temptation, right? What does the enemy do there? Well, the enemy, in his deception, has one thing in mind, and that is that he wants to pull his people, God's people, away from the will of God. He wants to take them and get them out of the position in which God has deployed them for, right? The position that would uphold his name, the position that would be a blessing to his people, right? A blessing to God himself. But here Samson was being tempted. He was being tempted, first of all, to marry into the Philistines, to marry into a pagan lifestyle, right? So many people think that they're going to convert their husband to a Christian, or their wife to be a Christian when they get married. But that's foolishness. It's always, the conversion is always in reverse, right? It hampers. I've seen it firsthand. My mother, she grew up in the church, you know. She was a Christian, and it seemed like she had all this heritage. But when my dad came into play, he was the pagan on the scene, and he just stifled her. He just stifled her. And it wasn't until my dad was saved at the age of about 63 that my mom, who was then 65, was finally freed, right? There was a bondage there. Because why? Because she was in the yoke collar with a pagan man, and guess who was leading? Of course, the pagan man was, not God. So it's a dangerous thing that he is going forth. He's going into this temptation of being married in this, and we'll see some of the results of this whole marriage that goes on between him and this daughter of the Philistines. And then into the land of wine, right? Into the land of wine, into Timnah, where the vineyards were. And something that would take him from the will of God and take him outside the will of God. And when we think of, it calls out there that not only wine, but intoxicated drink, right? So it classifies it in the sense that it wasn't supposed to be something that was fermented so that they would get intoxicated by it. Because we all know that intoxication doesn't come with a case of beer. It can come with a couple beers, right? If I was to have one beer right now, I would probably be a little intoxicated. At least I would, you know, that was always a talking point of Christians. They say, well, how much can I drink, right? They're trying to get to the edge of the fire pit, right? And so they say, well, how much can I drink? Well, can I have one drink? Well, can I have drink? I don't know. That's between you and the Lord, but one drink has alcohol in it. So if that one drink can influence us, right? I say stay away from it. That's my whole thing, man. The Lord convicted me a long time ago about it, and I know it's a personal conviction, but I think we're so much better off without it. We can think straight. We don't have to worry about falling back into the sin, being tempted to the sin that we once fell out of. Some of us struggled with it, right? Some of us struggled with the alcohol stuff, you know. It was part of our lives for quite a while, and gee, why do we want to go back to the hog's trough, you know? It just doesn't make sense. Or the dog's vomit, you know? And so, how do we stay within the will of God? You know, what precautions can we take, right? And, you know, I say all this not to be legalistic, right? But just to be holistic, in a sense. So that we continue to grow in holiness, right? Certainly, you can't find where God numbers the beers, right, in the Bible. But certainly you can use some judgment that is given to Him, to us, by His Spirit, I think. But both, whether it was the marriage to the daughter to the Philistines, or the arrival into the vineyards, both were a distraction for Him. It was a distraction, and it would actually, combined in a sense into one big distraction from the will of the Lord. And then we see the young lion there. And it says, now to his surprise a young lion roared and the Spirit of God came upon him. And of course he destroyed the lion with his bare hands. Sometimes we think that these life pleasures are going to do a wonderful thing for our lives. I hear the term happy a lot. It's going to make, if I do this, this is going to make me happy. It's going to make me happy. And a lot, often what happens is that it really feeds the flesh. You know, it just feeds the flesh. And well, this marriage is going to make me happy. This land of Timnah being there is going to make me happy. No, the Spirit of the Lord makes me happy. Right? That's a blessing that is upon my life that allows me to be blessed. Right? I mean, when Jesus went through all the Beatitudes there, blessed is the man, you know, happy is the man. It's a wonderful blessing, right? So I think when we think about the Spirit of the Lord and the victory that it demonstrated in Samson's life just over the lion, you know, and believe me, we can have young lions in our lives. We can have them new sins that pop up, them new temptations that pop in. You know, if we've had victory over a sin for a while, don't get too content with that, because sometimes the enemy will come in and try new tactics to try to pull you away from the will of God. Alright, so be careful. But the Spirit of God is the one that gives us victory in any case. Right? You know, and the other thing here is I think it shows a true character of God in this section of Scripture, where it says, and the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him, and he tore the lion apart as would have torn a young goat, though he did it with his own hands, you know. And I look upon this and I say, how dedicated God was to Samson. Right? How dedicated he was to Samson. Even though Samson was more enthralled with the woman, perhaps the vineyards, you know, all that stuff. Yet God was faithful. God was still dedicated to him, even though some of his dedication points of Samson's life there was really being tested, was being tempted away. But God is always faithful. Then he went down and talked with the woman, and she pleased Samson well. After some time, when he returned to get her, he turned aside to see the carcass of the lion, and behold, a swarm of bees and honey were in the carcass of the lion. He took some of it in his hands and went along eating. When he came to the father and mother, he gave to some of them and they ate, but he did not tell them that he had taken the honey out of the carcass of the lion. Some things are just better off unknown, right? We don't need to know where this food is coming from, right? But it says there that she pleased him well. And again, not necessarily good for him, right? Not necessarily good for him. Proverbs chapter 4, verse 23 says this, "Keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it springs issues of life." Not just because it pleased him that was it really identified as good. In other words, Proverbs saying, be careful. But I think here God gives him an illustration here. One thing is that the Nazirite was to be separate from the corpse, right? That there was supposed to be this separation from any dead body. They weren't supposed to touch it. It would be considered unclean. And even though, and number two, even though something, he knew it was a dead corpse, right? And then he looked inside it and he saw the sweet honey, right? And now if you could only put that out of your mind for a little bit and say, separate the two and say, well, okay, dead corpse, bad, but honey seems to be a good thing to eat, a little honeycomb or a little sweetener there. It contains honey. This dead animal contained honey. It was sweet. Gee, that's good, isn't it? But death is death, right? Death is death. No matter how sweet it might taste, death is death. I mean, Scripture tells us, right, that sin is pleasurable for a season. What happens when that season is over? It brings about death, right? And so, I think for us here, it's important that that the Spirit of God shows us the corpses. Shows us the corpses in our lives. Shows us the corpses when we're out and about. Okay, this looks appealing. Sometimes the good on something can really blur our vision, where we're like, wow, this is so good. But we don't see the death in it all. We don't see the rottenness of it all. We don't see the decay. And so often our senses lie to us. That's why we need the Spirit of God to tell us, give us that discernment. Fred, this is not right. But it looks good. It tastes good. It seems pleasing to me. But Fred, it's not good. We need that, right? We need that Spirit to speak to us and give us that discernment. Let's see, verse 10. I wrote a little subnote in my Bible here. I just wanted to read it to you in reference to the honey out of the carcass. I wrote, compromise hides so never to be exposed. It's kind of like the honey was hiding the deadness of the corpse. And that's sometimes what we do. We hide things. You know, I mean, think about it. How you doing? You asked me that this evening, right, when you walked in. How you doing, Pastor Fred? I said, okay. Don't we hide things sometimes by saying that? Not that I was hiding anything. I don't know. I was okay at the moment, I guess. It was a rough day. But at that particular moment, I guess I was okay. But sometimes we do that, don't we? Kind of superficially say, we cover it. But sometimes our compromising, our, you know, when we're in a state of compromise, like Samson was, he was compromising what the Lord had planned for him, what the Lord had really anointed him to be, that leader, that Nazirite. He had compromised, and that compromise was trying to hide something so it wouldn't ever be exposed, and that's really the death, the carcass there. Verse 10. So his father went down to the woman, and Samson gave a feast there, for young men used to do so. And it happened, when they saw him, that they brought 30 companions to be with him. You know, when I first read through this, I was thinking, okay, you know, Samson was just having a little feast here. It was something that was traditional. And of course, I would think back to those times, you know, when we got married, and how we would have that wedding rehearsal, and then afterwards maybe a little feast there. We'd sit around and talk and enjoy the evening together before the marriage took place. But that's not really what it is. The Hebrew word for that is hishta. And it really means a big old drinking party. Where was this? This was in the vineyards of Timnah. So first of all, he went to the vineyards of Timnah, which was the temptation. But see, the act of sin was participating in what the Lord had asked him not to do, right? He was a Nazirite. He was supposed to sustain from wine or any intoxicated drink that would have similar nature to it. But the vineyards, going to the vineyards, why didn't he stay at Zora? Why didn't he stay where he was supposed to stay and get hitched with a gal from the tribe? You know, that was an Israelite. Why didn't he do that? Why did he wander away? Well, he was tempted. He was tempted through his eyes. And the enemy knows that the flesh is so weak. And so the senses often give us a false reading on the will of God. Oh, it looks so good. It looks so good. I think that's where I'll go. You know, one of the prayer there that, well, the Lord is teaching his disciples in chapter 6 how to pray, right? And really that we call a Lord's Prayer, but really it's, to me, it's just the elements of a great prayer. And one of the elements there was, lead us not into temptation. And then it follows it, but deliver us from evil. Right? So Lord, let us not even go there. That should be one of our biggest prayers, shouldn't it? Lord, you know me. You know me, Lord. You know how I am. Lord, let me not get in that situation. That should be one of our first prayers, I think. Should be mine anyways. And then, Lord, deliver me from any evil that I can't even suspect, you know. Let me not go there, and if there is evil around me, deliver it. Deliver him from me. So, you know, I think of Samson here. What was he? He was a deliverer. He was a deliverer of Israel out of the oppression of the enemy. You know? But what was he doing? He was falling for the temptation that had been put before his eyes. You know? And how important it is for us to just be so dependent upon Him. Lord, where You lead, let it be not in temptation. You know? So many times you'll hear a guy that gets saved, and you know, I understand the heart of a guy that has been addicted to whatever he's been addicted to, but say, for example, he's an alcoholic, and he gets saved, God cleanses him from that, and it's amazing. We see the change in his life and everything, but he has a heart for those that are under the influence, in a sense. The last place for him to go do his witnessing should be at the bar stool. Right? I mean, the flesh is weak. Right? The spirit perhaps is willing and wants that person to get saved, and I understand the heart of it, but boy, there's such a draw on that. And I remember my sister, she'll forgive me someday for telling you this story, but I remember she went to Houghton College. I don't think she was born again at that time. Oops, sorry about that. I don't think she was born again or anything like that. I don't know why I said that. But anyway, she wasn't born again. And she had a friend that was going to Alfred State, Wellsville campus, and he would lure her down and they would go out. And I really think that at first she just sat on the bar stool and she might have had a Coke. And then the Coke came with rum. And then the pot came and all that stuff. And so, not that she was saved, not that she was there for a witnessing opportunity, but see, she was just in the flesh. She was just in the flesh, and that flesh can be so deceiving. Well, I'm just going to sit there and I'm just going to be friends, you know. I'm just going to be friends with my friends. And that same individual that led her down there, we found out years later, well, not years later, probably a few years later, that he was a practicing homosexual. And it wasn't but five years later he got AIDS. And he died. See, sin. I'll tell you, Christian, you know, I mean, you know, sin is lethal, right? Sin is lethal. It's pleasurable for a season, but we have to be careful. You know, we have to be careful how we walk. Are we walking according to the Spirit of God, or are we walking according to our flesh? We can look back on people's lives and learn lessons. And certainly with Samson's life, we can certainly learn the lesson here that, you know, it's better off to be in the will of God. It's better off to do as He's that thing in which He's called us to, right? He called Samson. You wonder about Samson, right? I mean, if you go back into chapter 13, it said his mission was that he was going to begin to deliver Israel. And you wonder if he didn't do all this crazy stuff. He didn't go to the Philistines for the women. He didn't go to the vineyards of Timnah. If he didn't go and make friends with Delilah, perhaps David wouldn't have had a job. Perhaps Samuel wouldn't have had a job to deliver Israel from the Philistines. Perhaps God would have took him and used him completely for that. Of course, we don't know that. But certainly, you could see where that might have been. Verse 12, then Samson said to them, "Let me pose a riddle to you. If you can correctly solve and explain it, to me within the 7 days of the feast. Get that, 7 days of the feast. So this drinking party was not an overnight sensation. This thing was a beer ball after beer ball. You know, this was hometown brew, right? 7 days of feast. Then I will give you 30 linen garments. And these were fine garments. These were things that, you know, this wasn't just your everyday jeans, right? And 30 changes of clothes. But if you cannot explain it to me, then you shall give me 30 linen garments and 30 changes of clothing. And they said to him, poise your riddle, that we may hear it. So he said to them, out of the eater came something to eat, and out of the strong came something sweet. Of course, we read the previous verses, so we should all know, right, what that means. Now, for 3 days, they could not explain the riddle. So, quite witty here. Seemingly an impossible venture on Samson's part, but here he goes, probably outwitting himself in a sense. Verse 15, but it came to pass on the seventh day that they said to Samson's wife, entice your husband that he may explain the riddle to us, or else we will burn you and your father's house with fire. Have you invited us in order to take what is yours? Is that not so? Then Samson's wife wept on him and said, you only hate me. You do not love me. You have posed a riddle to the sons of my people, but you have not explained it to me. And he said to her, look, I have not explained it to my father or my mother, so should I explain it to you? There's some problems in that statement. There's some problems and some marital problems in that statement, right? Some leaving and cleaving problems in that statement, right? If you're married, your husband should be the first one to hear, not your parents, right? Now she had wept on him for 7 days while their feast lasted, and it happened on the seventh day that he told her, because she pressed him so much that she explained the riddle to the sons of her people. So the men of the city said to him on the seventh day before the sun went down, what is sweeter than honey, and what is stronger than a lion? And he said to them, if you had not plowed with my heifer, you would not have solved my riddle. He kind of understood how they got the answer, right? So here's his wife. She's using the old female charm, right? And crying. How many of us have fallen for that? Just kidding. Or we sympathize with that, right? I mean, the male instinct is when their bride is crying, we hope, right, that our instinct is to go and comfort them. But unfortunately, this crying here was kind of a manipulation of feelings, so that she could obviously save her family. Wasn't much thinking about where Samson would lie in this, right? But the bottom line is, Samson was just as much at fault here as she was. He shouldn't have dabbled in this whole riddle bet kind of thing, you know. And certainly he gave priority over his father and mother than he did his own bride. So there was problems, there was grief within this relationship. Certainly there was issues. She was concerned about her well-being. She was concerned about her family's well-being, the other Philistines there. There was no leaving or cleaving to her husband, right? Leaving her parents and cleaving to her husband there. So there were certainly problems that were in the midst here. And of course, the biggest problem of all is the step that Samson took with his eyes that will soon fail him with Delilah as well. Not relying upon God to choose our mate. I find that to be one of the biggest struggle for young people today is that they think that they have to go out and find their spouse, find their bride, find their husband. When God has it all in His hands, you know, we just wait upon Him. You know, He just leads us. I was telling one fella one day, I said, you know what? And I think I've told Karen this too. I got to a point where I felt like I'm content. I'm content with the Lord being single. And then Karen spoiled it all. No. No, but you know, but I came to the point where my relationship with the Lord, I felt pretty like, this is good enough for me. I can live life like this, and this is good. You know, God had other plans, but I didn't have to enact my plan upon His and help Him out a little bit. You know, get on the dating websites and, you know, and put the ads in there and so forth. And God doesn't need our help. You know, just wait on Him. It's so hard to wait. I wish I brought my journal with me today, but I was reading in I was reading a section in Hosea there a while back, and I was maybe I can even find it, but yeah, in chapter 12, verse 6 of chapter 12, there it says, "So you, by the help of your God, return, observe mercy and justice." And wait on your Lord, wait on your God continually. And then we go right back, go right on to the next verse. You know, but that wait on the Lord is such a hard thing to do sometimes. But Lord, I've been waiting and waiting. But remember, His time scale is not ours. And vice versa. He's outside of time, right? I mean, hey. So anyways, where was I? Got to find my place here now. Little rabbit trail there. And then he mentions at the end, right? He mentions right at the end after they seemingly solved the riddle there. He says, if you had not plowed with my heifer, what is he talking about there? If you hadn't used my wife, you would not have solved my riddle. If you didn't, you know, and right there it tells you something that his heifer, his wife, wasn't trusting him anymore. He was, you know, how could he trust her? Have you ever told your wife something and it's went around the block a couple of times, you get a little nervous. Maybe I shouldn't tell her again, right? And the church struggles with that, you know. We, you know, I know with Karen, man, I tell her things sometimes that are on my heart, and it never seems to leave her lips. And that's the way it needs to be. You know, there needs to be some trust between the husband and the wife, or else it just doesn't work, right? And so there's some things that are just for the couple, you know. But here we see the trust breakdown, and that becomes very destructive for the marriage bond there. Then verse 19, and it says, "The Spirit of the Lord came upon him mightily, and he went down to Ashkelon and killed 30 of their men, took their apparel, and changed, and gave the change of clothes to those who had explained the riddle. So his anger was aroused, and he went up to his father's house. And Samson's wife was given to his companion, who had been his best man. So the Spirit of the Lord came mighty upon him, and he went down to Ashkelon and killed 30 of their men. Remember, the purpose here of Samson was to what? Deliver Israel, right? Deliver Israel out of the oppression of the Philistines. So this wasn't about revenge. This was about God's way of using Samson. Even though he was weak, in his weakness, God was going to pour out his Spirit here and use him for his purpose to begin to deliver Israel out of the hands of the Philistines. Certainly, the bet here that he did never should have happened. It was destructive to his marriage relationship with his wife. It broke down the trust there, and it was it wasn't what the Lord wanted out of him, right? He was led into this marriage agreement from his own flesh, and he finished it with his own flesh, right? And that's how we do it. We're led into something with our own flesh, and then we finish it with our own flesh. And God isn't involved. What we think isn't involved in it, but isn't it wonderful that he's more sovereign than we think? And he certainly uses even the stupidity and the weakness of Samson here. He still uses it to begin the deliverance of his people out of the hand of the Philistines. And of course now, Samson loses his wife. It says here to his companion, I think some versions say his best man. Or it does say his best man here. Who had been his best man. So, I'm sure he's not his best man now. Right? But anyways, I was going to get into 15 there, but I think we're going to stop there and pick up on 15 as he, you know, the one thing I like about Samson and his venture now into the, well, there's some miraculous things that happen here that blow your mind a little bit with the foxes and all that stuff and the jawbone of the donkey but we'll get into that next time for sure.